Buying or selling your home? Real Estate for Life can connect you with a pro-life real estate agent. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 65% to Catholic Answers. Learn more at realestateforlife.org. Hello and welcome to Catholic Answers Live, and we have a very special guest in the studio named Amy, and I wanted to say hallo und willkommen bei Catholic Answers Live, Amy, because Amy speaks German. Her family is here, a beautiful family from Austria, Slovakia via Austria, here visiting the United States, and we're happy to have them in studio. We've got a great show for you today. Joe Heschmeyer is here. I know you're thinking maybe those two things don't usually go together, but today they do. Joe Heschmeyer, apologist here at Catholic Answers, author of The Eucharist is Really Jesus, and Pope Peter and the early church was the Catholic Church. Hello, Joe Heschmeyer.
If Cy seems like he's in an unusually good mood, it's because our guest brought us Mozartkuchen, which is chocolate like from Austria that's kind of famous. And they came here from Austria and came bearing gifts, which we are very excited to consume.
I have a full bag of Mozartkuchen. Kugeln? Is that
what you said? We're nailing it.
We're nailing it. If I can't do German, nobody can. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to not sharing these with anybody. What we're going to do today is we're going to do questions from non-Catholics. Why aren't you Catholic? If you're not Catholic, we'd love you to call 888-318-7884. Why aren't you Catholic? And I'll be honest with you. I'll tell you why we're doing this, because we did it a little while ago, and it was extremely popular. Lots and lots of people either A, called and asked questions, or watched that show on YouTube. As a matter of fact, I think it was one of the most popular shows we've done on YouTube. Am I right, Darren? We thought, well, let's just do it again. We've got Joe here in the studio with us. He's out here on the West Coast today. And so why aren't you Catholic today on Catholic Answers Live? 888-318-7884. Now, I am going to ask you a question while people dial the phone. I want non-Catholics to call. We want you to call. If you've got a question, a challenge, you'd like some clarity about something about the Catholic faith, 888-318-7884. But I mentioned that wonderful family from they live in Austria now.
Yes.
And they can't stay too long, but Dad had a question for you.
Yes.
So, and I said, well, why don't we just discuss it on the air? Well, we got you here in the studio. We'll just discuss it on the air. So what were you two talking about?
Yeah, he asked, you know, as a Catholic living in Central Europe, what do you do, for instance, when the Austrian bishop's website promotes material that is not in keeping with Catholic teaching? When they're promoting gender theory and all sorts of strange stuff, it obviously is a counter signal, and it's a way that is not promoting the proclamation of the gospel. It's a source of scandal and confusion. And I think all of that is perfectly a reasonable reaction to say, this is really bad. It's bad enough. If you go to Mass and the priest says something heretical, that's not good. I mean, obviously. But it's worse when the bishop says it. And I think it's worse still if a bishop's conference says it on their website, or even just allows stuff that's really crazy to be posted on their website. And I would say a few things. One, occasionally it'll happen that this stuff is sort of being done without the awareness of the bishop. So many years ago, Kansas City St. Joseph had a good, solid Orthodox bishop, but there was stuff that was on the Kansas City diocesan website that was really strange. It was talking about the liturgical changes that had happened in the cathedral, and it had like the architect's notes and kind of the story about why. And it was talking about how they wanted to break away from the medieval model where Mass was like a stage acting thing and the priest was up on stage with the altar facing the wall. And it was so bizarre. It did not keep at all with, you know, any of the teachings that the bishop had actually done. And so at one point I just finally asked the vocation director, I was in the process of discerning at the time, and I said, why is the bishop like promoting this on the website? And the answer was no one knew it was on the website. And so then it wasn't on the website anymore. So every now and then you'll really be fortunate and it just turns out some rogue employee somewhere at a bishop's conference just posted their own kind of theories. Or more frequently, they subscribe to like what's called an RSS feed, where it's like the news of the day. And so you might have, you know, Catholic World News or something like this. But in other parts of the world, sometimes the local Catholic news isn't very good. And then it's just being automatically downloaded onto the website. So occasionally you can call those things out and they'll actually do something about it. It's obviously a much harder problem if they're like, no, no, we want that to be there. And, you know, certainly there are plenty of indications from the German church, and I think from the Swiss church as well, that there is a sizable portion of even the episcopacy that doesn't view Catholic teaching in the way that the Supreme Magisterium of the Church does. And it's an issue that the church has to tread very carefully, because the last thing we want is to create another Reformation and, you know, another set of schisms where the healing just becomes short of a miracle, impossible. If we can police the things that are just clearly over the line and then have some patience with the things that are not great, but see basically what you can
work
with.
Closer to the line.
Right, right. Closer to the line.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
And then beyond that, I think just find people preaching orthodoxy, preaching with clarity, and do what you can to direct confused souls to those bastions of German-speaking lucidity and clarity and brilliance. I have a family that lives in southern Germany, and I know that those places do exist, but I also know it can sometimes be a little bit of an uphill battle to find good, reliable voices in union with the church that aren't promoting craziness from one direction or another.
Thank you very much for the question. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. And if you are not a Catholic, we would love to take your call. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. I want to open my Mozart chocolate so bad, but I will refrain and go to the phone. You ready to go to the phones?
Let's do it.
You feel all right about going to the phones? All right. There's still lines open, though. So I know sometimes a non-Catholic is listening is like, I don't want to call a Catholic radio show. They don't want to talk. Yeah, we do. Yeah, we do. We love talking with you. So go ahead and dial 888-318-7884. Aaron in Hastings, Michigan, watching on YouTube. Welcome back, Aaron.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. The question I have is actually about John the Baptist's comment about the brood of vipers, and I'm trying to understand the discrepancy between Matthew 3:7 and Luke 3:7. Was he just where Matthew, he was talking to the Pharisees and religious leaders, from my understanding, and in Luke, it sounded like he was talking to the whole as the whole Jewish people.
Yeah. Well, it says the multitudes in Luke. It says the multitudes, yeah, in Luke, not in Matthew. So in Matthew chapter 3, beginning in verse 4, now John wore a garment of camel's hair and a leather girdle around his waist, and his food was locusts and wild honey. Then went out to him Jerusalem and all Judea and all the regions surrounding all the Jordan, and they were baptized by him in the river Jordan, confessing their sins. But when he saw many of the Pharisees and Sadducees coming for baptism, he said to them, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come? Bear fruit that befits repentance, and do not presume to say to yourselves, 'We have Abraham as our father.' For I tell you, God is able from these stones to raise up children to Abraham." And Luke, in contrast, it's a little more of a terse account. It just says, he then said to the multitudes that came out to be baptized by him, "You brood of vipers, who warned you to flee from the wrath to come," and so on. And so it's clearly the same words. The way it's worded in Luke 3, it just says the multitudes. And we're not really given the context for why he would, you know, he's out there baptizing. Why is he mad at people coming out to get baptized? It's clearer in Matthew kind of what is going on there, that it's people who are coming for the wrong reason. I mean, this would be the first century equivalent of the politician who gets photographed going to church. I mean, they're there, and in one sense, you think, well, of course we want our politicians to go to church. We want everyone to go to church. But if they're going to church to be seen, and they're going to church to be, you know, praised for their holiness, or in this case, they're going to the River Jordan to be baptized, confessing their sins so they can really show how self-righteous they are, then the appropriate response is of course, what John the Baptist says, like, bear fruit that befits repentance. Let's see that this is real, and not just you doing basically a PR stunt or performative piety.
All right, Aaron?
Okay, I was wondering on that because I was like, I know the Bible can never contradict itself. It was just kind of trying to understand the.
Yeah, it often happens that one version is maybe clearer or more detailed than the others. You know, different authors have different foci, and as a result, they might tell you more of the details of a particular event, which is why I think what you're doing right there, of reading them sort of side by side, is a really good way to understand more deeply what's being expressed in the event.
Aaron, thanks. I appreciate the call. I'm sorry we weren't able to talk with you yesterday, but I'm glad we got you on today, and we got to take a quick break. Right back with more Why Aren't You Catholic on Catholic Answers Live. If that's you and you want to talk about it, 888-318-7884.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Are you ready to spread your wings? Wings is the weekly newsletter that's packed with exclusive news, program information, features, and updates of all that's going on at the Global Catholic Network. To sign up, go to EWTN.com, click subscribe, enter your name and email address, and you'll start getting your wings every week. Get your wings today. It's the weekly newsletter from EWTN, the Global Catholic Network.
Bill Coleman back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. I'm so excited that we have a German-speaking family in the studio with us that I'm using my one German word over and over again. Although, Auf Wiedersehen, that's German, right? What else do we... What other...
Most of my German words come from Sound of Music.
Sound of Music. So, Edelweiss? What else? What else? What's that like...
No, that was all of it.
That's all the German we've got?
Oh, Ich bin ein Berliner.
Oh, yes, that's right. Which is, by the way, does not mean I'm a jelly donut. That's a myth. Anyway, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to get into defending the
I like that we're doing Catholic Answers / bad German lessons from people who don't speak German.
That's right.
Can I say as an aside, almost every German, like native German speaker I've spoken to, has begun by saying, I'm so sorry for my English, and then proceeded to speak English that is indistinguishable from native English.
I know. Right. And then the thing, it's like if you get into a German car and they'd be like, I'm so sorry for the engineering shortcomings. Yeah, right. It's perfect, but I'm so sorry for it. Well, they got standards. Were we going to do something else? Or are we going back to the phones?
I think we're going to go back to the phones.
We're going back to the phones? All right. Tim's in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where there are lots of Germans. Watching on YouTube. Welcome, Tim. No, Tim?
Yes,
line two? Oh, hi, Tim.
Yes, my question is about Catholic teaching and Catholic culture as it regards Israel and the Jews. A few weeks ago, when Senator Cruz was talking to Tucker Carlson, he mentioned how evangelicals support Israel and the Jews because of some verses in Genesis. And then the Catholic response to that seemed to be saying, no, that doesn't really hold out.
Wait, who gave the Catholic response?
As an evangelical...
I'm just curious. Sorry. Who gave the Catholic response?
Oh, well, I've been watching... Mr. Heschmeyer did an episode about it, and I watched that. And I just... My feeling from those responses was that I was thinking, like, where is the Catholic support for Israel? Like, we owe a debt of gratitude to the Jews for giving us the scriptures, and we wouldn't have the Protestant church or the Catholic church if it weren't for the Jews. And so I'm just looking for clarification from a Catholic perspective about what they teach regarding Israel.
I would just add one thing, Tim. I know a very famous person who said salvation is from the Jews. So we could go that route, too.
Hint, it's in John 4.
Yes.
So there's been a tonal shift, I would say, in terms of how the church speaks of Jews and somewhat Israel. So we have to distinguish between the nation state of Israel and Jewish people. When it comes to Jewish people, we can rightly, and St. Paul talks about this quite a bit, we can recognize the shared spiritual heritage that we have. Things like the oracles of God, meaning the Old Testament, and, you know, obviously even the New Testament comes through Jewish writers, even if it's not accepted as canonical by those practicing the religion of Judaism. And much of the story of salvation history, of course, runs through Israel. And so there is this great spiritual heritage. Now, this is to people thousands of years ago, but it's something that is a common heritage of both. So, you know, if you meet a Jewish person at your work, I don't think you'd say, oh, you know, thank you so much for giving us the Old Testament, any more than if you met a Greek coworker, you would say, thank you so much for inventing democracy. Like, this is a distant ancestor in both cases. But recognizing that there is this shared spiritual heritage is really important, both for treating people charitably, but also in terms of evangelization, recognizing that Judaism is somewhat unique and that when we build off of what they have accepted as revealed religion, we're building off of things that are already true and from God. Whereas in other religions, you have to do a much more careful job of saying, okay, you know, you come from this religious background. These teachings that you were taught are maybe true. These ones are false. These ones are sort of true, sort of false. And you have to do a lot more of the sifting. You don't have to do that at the level of scripture when it comes to Judaism. So there are major areas where we have a tremendous amount in common. In terms of the Ted Cruz thing, this is a particular covenant theology question. That when God promises blessings to Abraham and his descendants, to whom does this covenant pass? And it doesn't pass the way property does to the firstborn. If it did, then Ishmael rather than Isaac would receive. And then after Isaac, it would go to Esau rather than Jacob, who is the one renamed Israel. So the very reason that the Israelites in the Old Testament are able to receive the covenant promises promised to Abraham in Genesis isn't because they happen to be the blood descendants of Abraham, because the Ishmaelites and the Edomites are as well. It's because they hold to the faith of Abraham. And this is the very point that Jesus makes. And in fact, if you heard the prior caller, John the Baptist, when he's confronted by the Pharisees and Sadducees, reminds him God can raise up sons of Abraham from these very stones. And St. Paul talks about in Romans how we are sons of Abraham, and the sonship that matters isn't a sonship by ethnicity, but a sonship by faith. And so it doesn't matter whether your 23andMe or your Ancestry.com tells you you're ethnically Jewish. What matters is whether you hold to the faith of Abraham. And if you do, and you're baptized into the church, you are part of the covenant people of God. St. Paul talks about this quite explicitly in Ephesians 2, as well as really all throughout Romans, but famously with the olive tree that the faithful Gentiles are grafted in and unfaithful Jews are broken off from it. The faithful Jews, of course, remaining in the covenant people as before. So all that's to say, God doesn't have two brides, like the nation state of Israel plus the church. So that then leads to the third part of the question. What do we say towards the nation state of Israel? Now, the Catholic Church has historically been opposed to the idea of Zionism because we don't recognize the earthly nation of Israel as the heavenly or earthly Zion. That is a particular religious concept. And even at the time, in the mid-20th century, there was a great deal of Jewish opposition to the idea that the United Nations could create a nation that only God can create. Like, God created the original Kingdom of Israel. The UN or the British partition can't possibly create it. Like, it is not in man's power to just name a country Israel and it suddenly receives the covenant blessing of God. You can't force God's hand into a newer covenant like that. So there aren't those two brides. Having said all that, we still want to be respectful to the fact that here's a group of people who faced horrible persecution, culminating in the Holocaust, who want to live free of persecution and shouldn't be targeted for violence and unfair treatment. And frequently, I think it's fair to say that they get treated more harshly than everyone else. So How should a Catholic or any Christian approach Israel? I would say the same way you would approach any other country. Having compassion for the legitimate reasons a people might want national security and prosperity and a place to call their own and everything else, but also being aware by the other half of that token that we should have that same compassion and charity towards, say, the Palestinian people. And so that's going to leave a wide variety of options for what a workable peace looks like. But we can't just say we side with this people and not that people in an unnuanced sort of way, because that is rarely, if ever, going to be the Christian response to a geopolitical problem.
What do you think, Tim?
It's a lot of different things to process.
Yeah.
So would the Catholic Church not hold that the creation of Israel in 1948 was a miracle? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, it's not a miracle at all. This is a UN resolution. And a lot of the stories about it being miraculous. So there's a series of allegedly like 12 miracles in the creation of Israel. But if you read about them, one of the second of the 12 so-called miracles involves Jewish militias fighting against the British, as well as against the Palestinians, occupying a Greek church and outfitting it with bombs and threatening to kill everyone in there. That's not a miracle from God. Like, that's a desecration of a church. And I think it's actually sacrilegious to call some of those events miraculous, which a lot of the kind of propaganda for the state of Israel does. Now, to be clear, a lot of people supporting Israel aren't aware of some of the uglier side of how the Israelis achieved independence and aren't saying that. But some of the language around the miraculous nature of it does kind of claim that. So, no, I think you can explain the existence of the nation state of Israel without appealing to supernatural causes.
Tim, thank you very much for the call. Why aren't you Catholic is our question to callers today. If you're not Catholic and you want to call, if you got a question for Joe, that's fine. If you want to tell us what it is that's keeping you out of the church, that would be great for us. We love these conversations. So please feel free to pick up. It could be anything from the profound to the, you might think it's trivial, but we'd still love to talk about it. Give us a call, 888-318-7884. Going to St. Louis, Missouri, where Ryan is listening to EWTN on Channel 130, Sirius XM Satellite Radio. Ryan, welcome.
Good evening, gentlemen, or good afternoon, I guess. It's still
for us, yes. Yes, right.
Thank you for taking my call. As you and some of the listeners know, I am a Catholic in training, candidate for the church. So in my case, it's why aren't you Catholic?
Yes.
I mentioned previously that both myself and my forever wife are going through the annulment process. Had some hiccups. So my question would be, if, let's say, the Easter Vigil rolls around and either or both of our annulments have not yet gone through, sort of what is going to be my status and, what do I do then? Still have, full intention of joining the church and, I'll be patient. It's going to take as long as it takes. I understand that. Just kind of want to get a little bit of clarity. And also, along those lines, my wife and I will be fostering a child with the possibility of adoption. And what would be the guidelines for raising that child in Catholic Church?
Well, could you clarify the second half of the question just so I know that what kind of guidelines you mean?
Sure. We are going to be fostering a child. It's a blood relative. Unfortunately, the mother has some substance problems.
Sure.
And
okay.
We will be fostering for at least several months or a year with the possibility of adoption. Given that, and I have expressed to my beloved bride that I would like if we adopt this child for her to be raised in the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess just trying to get as much information as I can.
Okay, great. That's very helpful clarifying questions. So let me begin with the annulment side. The first thing to say is Jesus's teaching on marriage, along with his teaching on the Eucharist, are two of the areas where they're flagged in the pages of Scripture itself as hard teachings. That there's something revolutionary about what Jesus is saying. The disciples, hearing what Jesus has to say about divorce and remarriage, respond by saying in Matthew 19, verse 10, if such is the case of a man with his wife, it is not expedient to marry. So the Catholic Church, one of the hallmarks of why you can trust what I'm about to say next is it's difficult. And that's one of the things we know about Jesus's teaching. So if you or your wife made a promise before God in the church, then the presumption is that promise stands. And so if you promised to be with someone else as their spouse until death do you part, the presumption is that you are married to that person in the eyes of God. And if God has joined the two together, man must not separate it. Now, there are all sorts of reasons why that presumption might be overcome. There are all sorts of reasons why an 18-year-old, say, getting married, doesn't have the right framework to do that. And that's where annulments come in. I'm going to talk more about that on the other half, and then what to do if that annulment either isn't granted or if it's pending and hasn't been granted yet around the Easter Vigil. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
Okay. All right. We'll be right back, Ryan, with Why Aren't You Catholic? With Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live. We hope that one of the things that we communicate here at Catholic Answers Live is that our Catholic faith allows us to be fully serious about all the problems we encounter in the church and in the world, but it also lets us have light hearts and maybe even mix in a bit of fun, and that is exactly what our good friend Joe Heschmeyer does in his popular podcast, Shameless Popery. You should check it out at shamelessjoe.com. Joe's got a deep grasp of the faith, of morals, the teachings of the church, all that. But he's also got a witty conversational style. He entertains and he informs. But you will leave equipped to better answer the most common challenges, misconceptions, and questions about the Catholic faith. He's got insightful guests. He does on-air debates. And he takes a close look into all the things that you want to know about as a Catholic living today. You'll walk away knowledgeable and filled with joy. Look for Joe on his YouTube channel. Check him out at shamelessjoe.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, become a patron.
Throughout history, some Catholics have been among the worst kind of villains, right? Or were they? In Canceled, historian Steve Weidenkopf digs into the lives and controversies of some of these Catholics whose reputations have been blackened, often unfairly. He takes on the anti-Catholic versions of history and defends not only these figures, but the faith they represent. Order your copy of Canceled today at shop.catholic.com or ask for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Each Catholic is obliged to spread and defend the faith by word and deed. Well, we're here to help. Join special guests Chris Stefanik, Dr. David Anders, Steve Dawson, and all your favorite Catholic Answers apologists this September 25th through 28th in beautiful San Diego for the Catholic Answers Conference. Our theme? Go make disciples. Enjoy 4 days of faith, fun, and fellowship. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 when you register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com. Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. Came out here to the West Coast just in time for the tsunami. Everybody okay?
Yeah. My sister and her family are actually in town as well, and they were down like on Coronado. And so their first time experiencing that, and then their first night they get a tsunami, like, watch.
Well, for those who don't know, Coronado is a very low-lying peninsula, and you would feel quite insecure there. But I don't know, was there damage in California?
They canceled it in the evening.
They canceled? You can cancel a tsunami? Warning?
Yeah, they canceled the watch or the warning or whatever it was.
What about Hawaii? Did they get it? Darren, do you know?
Everything I was seeing just looked like there was some bad traffic as people were kind of trying to get to high land. So thanks be to God, it seems like the warnings were, you know, unnecessary, which is good. I mean, you want people to be erring on the side of caution with such things.
We have tsunami warning signs in my town that tell you which way to go. And they just point inland. So, but they pretty much end right at my house. So I always figure, like, I think I'm safe right here.
Yeah, there you go.
I think I might be in the spot where I'm good.
Yeah, I built my house on the teachings of Jesus, so I think I'm okay.
Oh, very good. Guys, I built mine on sand first.
Yeah, I mean, it was closer to the water. It was right. Great.
All right, let's go to Lugoff. Is that how you would say it, South Carolina?
I'm still actually in the middle of answering a question.
I apologize. Somebody cut that question out, and that made me think that it was that we were done with it. I'm sure you remember the name of the person we're talking to.
It's not Aaron.
Ryan.
Ryan. Thank Ryan. You. I'm sorry. Yeah, no. Oh yeah, it's Ryan in St. Louis. I know a Ryan in St. Louis.
But it's not there on our screen anymore.
That's true. So this is just complaining about people behind the scenes.
In my mind, it just disappeared.
When they can't say anything back, they can mute your mic. I just want to say that. Just a strong hint.
Ryan in Switzerland. Ryan in Switzerland. I don't know where that came from. Ryan in St. Louis. You're still with us, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So, all right. Okay.
Important word for German. You get that, you got a lot of it.
Wait, what is it? We missed it. Joe coughed. Yeah. Oh, ja?
Yeah. Genau.
Oh.
Ja, genau.
Ja, genau? What does it mean? Ja.
I would ask your German friends to translate what it means as a sort of yes, exactly.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, I see.
Like, ja, genau. I'm going to the game.
Oh, gotcha.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
All right. So, in the case in which the church finds that you or your putative bride are in fact married in the eyes of God to someone else, then that creates obviously a rather complicated situation for you, particularly if you're in the process of, you know, raising a foster child together, or you may have children of your own, or I don't know all of the kind of details of your circumstance. And in those cases, the counsel of the church would simply to be, if you can't separate prudently, and in a case like that, you wouldn't want to just go live in separate houses, then you would have to live as brother and sister. That you wouldn't be able to live more uxorio, like in the married way, if you aren't married to one another. And so in that case, you know, you could still, you know, certainly raise this foster child together, which seems like the obvious charitable thing to do, but you couldn't continue to have like a marital sexual relationship if you're not married in the eyes of God. So I would just say, let the church determine what the right answer is there and trust that determination, because it may very well turn out that they say, neither of you had the requisite conditions to be able to get married. There was whatever reason for, you know, lacking the kind of the awareness of what the nature of marriage is. Particularly one of the issues these days is that people don't regard marriage as permanent. And so holding someone to a permanent marriage, if they were taught growing up, you know, that this, you can get out of this if you want to, that creates all sorts of complications. So I would say let the church kind of adjudicate this thing. And I know it can be frustrating because it can be sort of a slow process. But, you know, bear in mind the reason why this has to be sorted out is because promises were made in the presence of God and witnesses, and we don't want to take those trivially. We want to give them the respect that they deserve and not lightly kind of disregard them.
Okay, Ryan?
It sounds great. Again, just to clarify, it was more, we both believe that we have strong cases for the declaration of nullity for our previous marriages. It was more, if the annulment is not finished by the time the Easter Vigil rolls around, when would I be able to?
Yeah, you can still come into the church, but you shouldn't be having a sexual relationship until you get the green light. And, you know, even if you are personally convinced, I don't think this one should count, this prior time I stood up before God and witnesses and said this, and you very well, I mean, it very well may be a null marriage, but we still give the presumption to it until the church determines otherwise. And so I would say just respect that until you hear from the church. And I think in a case where you are in the process of RCIA and this is a recognized issue that might complicate your reception into the church, that can be a good bit of encouragement to the tribunal to kind of speed up the examination of the relevant issue.
Ryan, I'm going to leave it there and say thanks. Every single line is full. Why aren't you Catholic is our topic. We've been enjoying in recent hours on the air having these conversations with folks who are not Catholic. We're very grateful for the calls. If they're challenging, that's okay. If they're, you have this issue or that issue that you'd just like to talk about, that's okay too, whatever. You're welcome here. If you're not Catholic today, give us a call, 888-318-7884. Let's go to, now we're going to Lugoff, South Carolina.
Yes.
Where Joseph is listening on Twitter. Did I say Lugoff? Is that correct, Joseph?
Yeah, if you're going to be here with the draw, it's going to be Lugoff.
Lugoff. All right. If I'm going to be there with the what?
Good enough.
Draw.
Oh, with the draw? Oh, I got to get my draw
if you're
on.
Here
okay.
With the draw, it's Lugoff.
Lugoff.
You say it without the vowels.
I can do that. I can do that, sure.
Lugoff.
Yeah. Well, welcome. Just.
I see you did there.
I did his name without the vowels. Isn't that what I was supposed to do? Joseph.
It's like the old joke. What do you call a fish with no eyes?
Yeah. That'd be Joseph Rick.
All right, Joseph, welcome.
I just want to say, once again, great radio, guys. All right, continue, Joseph.
I have a number of theological things, but I think one of my big ones that I have regarding why I'm not Catholic is whenever I speak to Catholics, and we're talking about theology, they'll typically bring up the magisterium and how the magisterium is the way to say it is like the governing authority for the interpretation of Scripture and doctrine.
That's not a half bad definition.
Part of my problem. Yeah.
Okay.
That's not a bad definition?
Yeah, not a bad definition. It comes from the word for teacher, magister. So it just means the teaching authority of the church.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Okay, great. So then the next step for me then is I go, well, I don't have access to that. Like, I can't just go to the internet and type in what does the magisterium teach on X verse or something like that. I'm always kind of thrown for a loop on that because it feels very much like an appeal to some ghostly authority I'm not allowed to directly ask a question to.
Okay. Yeah, I see what you're saying, I think. So the teaching office of the church is described in the Catechism, beginning in paragraph 888. Now, the first thing I'd say is the Catechism itself is a great summary of what the church teaches on various topics. The second thing that's probably worth pointing out is there's a difference frequently in how Catholics and Protestants particularly will approach these kind of questions, where most teaching from the Catholic side is done at the level of doctrine, not at the level of the chapter or verse. So this often throws people coming from a Protestant background for a loop, because they're expecting that there's somewhere where, like, an official Vatican kind of commentary verse by verse on Scripture, and that's not the way the magisterium tends to teach. There are a handful of verses where, in the course of defending a particular doctrine, the church will say, you know, for instance, with original sin, that when St. Paul talks about sin entering the world through one man, that this is in reference to original sin. But those are actually pretty few and far between. The usual way that this is approached is X doctrine, like the Trinity, is defined. But it's not, you have to read this particular Bible verse as supporting the Trinity. It is rather that taking the whole of Scripture, if your conclusion on the topic of the nature of God leads you to a non-Trinitarian conclusion, then you've read Scripture wrong. Whatever passage you're reading that has led you in that direction, you're misreading it. But it's not verse by verse. Think about, like, the Nicene Creed, for instance. The Nicene Creed is doctrine by doctrine. It's not verse by verse. So then it's like, okay, well, if I want to find out what does the church teach on a particular topic, you actually could Google what does the magisterium teach about X topic, and you'd probably find a pretty good summary. You might find it on our website. You might find it on the Vatican's website. You might find any number of people talking about it, and then you look at what they're quoting. When you're looking for magisterial teaching, you look to things that ecumenical councils have said, particularly in defining dogma. You're looking to things that popes have said, particularly in defining some doctrine, some dogma, as a matter of faith and morals. And you're looking for the clear witness of what the bishops in union with the Pope have said. And if you have, you know, like the church fathers and look at how like 2,000 years of Christians have spoken on it. And that can make at times, admittedly, for a very deep dive. So I'm giving you this sort of deep dive answer. A much easier way in, you know, 90% of cases is just look up what the catechism has to say. And thanks be to God, there's a lovely church down in Lafayette, Louisiana, the St. Charles Borromeo. Oh, sorry, it's in Picayune, Mississippi. My mistake. St. Charles Borromeo has a searchable catechism of the Catholic Church. So you can literally just go to their website and put in whatever word, and it'll take you to the corresponding paragraph of the catechism, which is a great way to get a short, here's what the church teaches on XYZ topic. Another good resource, if you want to stick around after we get done talking, is Trent Horn's Why We're Catholic, where it's a good kind of primer on just like the kind of some of the big ticket items, and then that can give us sort of a basis to move forward from there. How does that sound?
Okay.
All right.
I think that's helpful. I guess then a follow-up to that.
Yeah.
Because I think that was a good distinction between it's not so much about chapter and verse as it is the topics. Mm-hmm. Would you say that the magisterium then, all of the topics, that it's exhaustive, or that there's just topics it doesn't speak on?
It's the second one. There are topics it doesn't speak on. There are topics that are still arising that we're in the process of sort of looking at. So, for instance, bioethics. There's all sorts of issues, like, for instance, embryo adoption, where some couple practices IVF, and then they convert, and they realize they can't just throw away their children, but maybe they're not in a stage where they're old enough, or either they're young enough to carry these children to birth. And then this raises this moral question of, well, maybe we've got, you know, friends or relatives who would be happy to bear these children, but that looks like having a donor, and all of those kind of moral questions. These are very new questions that weren't even an issue at the start of my lifetime. And so we're never going to just exhaust, here's everything to know about God, or here's everything to know about morality, or here's every possible question people could ask. But there, like, the focus isn't, let's make sure we have a common starting place and then all go interpret scripture for ourselves. The focus is much more, let's make sure we're arriving at the right destination on these issues of faith and morality.
I'll tell you what, Joseph, what I'd like to do is send you a copy of Why We're Catholic, but I'd also like to add a second book for you. It's called Teaching with Authority.
Oh, that's a great choice. Yeah, that's a direct sound point.
How to Cut Through Doctrinal Confusion and Understand What the Church Really Says. That's by Jimmy Akin. So two books for you, Joseph. All you got to do is give us an address. We'll send it off there to South Carolina. We have to take a very, very quick break, then back to Why Aren't You Catholic with Joe Heschmeyer on Catholic Answers Live.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
The Catechism defines evangelization as the proclamation of Christ and his gospel by word and the testimony of life. But what does that look like in real life? It looks like St. Paul street evangelists out in the public square sharing the good news. We're a Catholic nonprofit that starts conversations by handing out free sacramentals. Then we employ our method of listen, befriend, proclaim, and invite. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization. Visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Debbie Giorgiani. Adam Bly and I invite you to join us as we tackle the spirit world on EWTN Radio. Adam has assisted at thousands of solemn exorcisms and resolutions of hauntings. He also reaches out to educate people on the paranormal and the occult in our culture. Join us Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern for the spirit world on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Joe Heschmeyer is our guest. He's freaking me out right now. I have never met someone who can do what he's doing right in front of me here in the studio. He is writing backwards. You can write a message starting at the end and go backwards. That's weird. That's not normal. Normal people can't do that. Let me see. Oh, so I got to read it through the thing?
If you read it through the paper, you'll see.
Okay.
It's as legible as my normal handwriting.
Except I don't have my glasses, Joe.
Again, this is great radio. Something that you can only see. Even the people who are watching are just...
Tell me what it says. Wait. Thanks for...
Hosting.
And
then
Joe Hitchmeyer.
Yeah.
If I had my glasses, I could have read that.
This is a skill issue on the receiver's end. Yeah, everything is received according to the mode of the receiver.
Which sometimes the receiver can't receive it because the eyeballs ain't working. That's a Thomas Aquinas conversation right there. Let's go to Stephanie in McCook, Nebraska. Listening, of course, as everybody in Nebraska does every day on Spirit Catholic Radio. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi there. Thank you so much for taking my call.
We're happy to. Why aren't you Catholic?
Well, about 2.5 years ago, let me give you a short background. So my husband and I have been married for 22 years. We've got 5 children. Pretty much so struggled with pretty severe depression and anxiety for our whole marriage, you know, because of having children and whatnot.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stephanie.
And about 2.5 years ago, I just kind of got to the end of myself and I was just on my face crying and bawling and saying, like, Lord, what am I missing? Why do I feel so empty? We've always been faithful Christians and brought our children up in the faith. And surprisingly, I heard in my spirit, when I was reading that day, it's like I'd never seen it before, but I read, "This is my body and my blood." And he showed me the Eucharist.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
And it was so real. I reached out to one of my Catholic friends and shared with her, and she kind of pointed me in the right direction of, you know, reliable people to help me look into the faith, like Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Joe, I listen to you all the time.
Who are the reliable people? No, I'm just kidding.
Those three plus some reliable.
And I've been doing
reliable
Bible in a year and catechism in a year.
Yeah, wow,
wonderful.
And so I've been very, very thorough in my investigation. Mm-hmm. I've also talked to my parish priest, and he's said, obviously, take your time, don't rush into anything. And this past spring, I really, really felt the calling to become Catholic, at the Easter Vigil, but my husband is just absolutely against it. He is kind of in the school of thought of, you know, Catholics worship Mary, Catholics pray to dead people, you know, all the...
Sure. We get a fair number of those calls,
like
yeah.
Yeah, okay, right. Yeah.
And this is hard to say out loud, but he was even so upset and so distraught at the idea that he said to me, I would never have married a Catholic girl, and I won't be married to a Catholic girl, and basically kind of threatened divorce. So I went back to my parish priest, and he, you know, after a long talk, he had said, you know, you're a wife and mother first and foremost, and just keep it in prayer. And so I'm at the point where I feel like I'm disobeying God by not coming into the church.
Okay.
But it's also causing a lot of conflict within my marriage.
Yeah, that is one of the hardest situations. You know, children whose parents won't let them go to Mass is maybe number one, and then in the cases of spouses. And I think it's fair to point out that there's something that is radically inhibiting your freedom in your husband's behavior. And I understand, you know, his perspective on this. He didn't sign up for that in his view. He didn't expect you to have this change, but he only has God to blame. Like, you're obviously a faithful Christian seeking to understand the Lord better. God has called you in a certain way, and he is trying to tell you you can't follow where Jesus is calling you as you have discerned. And I think if you put it in those terms, like, he is directly interfering with your path of discipleship. And I think if you can lay that out, now, I don't know the details of your marriage, but I would encourage, rather than focusing on trying to convince him to become Catholic right away, just getting him to recognize that our duty is actually to Christ first. I mean, Jesus talks about how he comes to set father against son and son against father in Luke 12. And then in Luke 14, he even says, if anyone comes after me and does not, hate his own father and mother and wife and children. Now, in your case, husband, not wife. But hate obviously doesn't literally mean hate there. It's hyperbolic. But there is this sense in which our following of Christ has to be first and foremost. And we can't let someone else determine our discipleship for us by telling us we're not allowed to follow where Christ is calling us. That is just not, that's not an appropriate boundary for one spouse to try to dictate that for another. Like, you have to follow where Christ is leading you. And I mean, the flip side is actually true as well. If a Catholic is having a crisis in faith, their spouse can't just be like, well, you can't have a crisis in faith. That's not acceptable.
Yeah.
That's an inappropriate boundary for one spouse to try to assert over another. You have to follow where you believe Jesus is calling you, and no human being has the authority to stand in the way of that. And everyone needs to take that seriously. Like, that is an actual, you're not a minor child where, you know, there's a better case that, like, parents have some role in restricting their kids' radical freedom. So if a kid just says, I don't want to go to Mass on Sunday, that doesn't have to be the last word. You're a grown-up. You're an adult woman. And so I think you have to say, I need to follow Jesus. And I think if you put it in those terms and pray about it fervently, I would even suggest fasting and doing mortifications for it, for a softness of his heart, just to accept that you as a Christian need to follow where you believe Christ is calling, and that to impede that and to delay where, when Christ is saying go and you say, I'm not going to go yet, I'm going to wait till a more convenient time, that constitutes disobedience, just as much as when you tell your kids, come to the car, and they say, once I'm done with the video game. The fact that they intend to do it eventually isn't obedience. It's, you know, putting you on their schedule. And I realize, as I'm saying this, this is heavy and hard teaching. This is one of the aspects of the high cost of discipleship. And I want you to be assured of my prayers. And I don't know if you feel comfortable sharing your husband's name on the air, but I would love to pray for him as well.
Yeah, his name's Scott.
All right, Stephanie and Scott. I've got a sister named Stephanie married to a guy whose brother's named Scott, so I'll remember that, hopefully.
Stephanie, have you come, I just want to clarify something, have you come to the decision that the Catholic Church is Christ's church and that that's where you're called to be?
1,000%. And for the first time in my life also, I finally feel like the true peace that I've always been searching
Praise
for.
God.
And I can finally say that I now love Jesus more than my husband, my children, my parents. He's like my absolute number one, and I want to do nothing more than what he tells me to do.
What a beautiful testimony.
You know
of faith,
what?
Stephanie.
I think
beautiful.
You should point to that testimony as well. Like, hopefully your husband can see that you have been transformed to become more Christ-like, even if it goes against all of his prejudices against Catholicism. And hopefully, if he will endure this period, even just for the sake of your following of Christ, you can be a living witness to the fact that someone can love Jesus and be Catholic. And in fact, that the more Catholic you become, the more you end up loving Jesus.
And the thing that Christ is calling you to is to receive him. You're struggling with anxiety and depression, and he's saying, I want to live with you. I want to be with you.
Yes.
And so I do want to, this is clearly going to be a process. Even if you were free to come into the church now, you would have to go through the OCIA, RCIA, but you've come to faith in the Catholic Church, which makes you one of us, and you are baptized or not baptized?
Yeah, so I was raised Lutheran, so I was baptized as an infant,
Well, has anyone told you about making a spiritual communion with Jesus?
I don't think so.
Well, you can just type in EWTN spiritual communion, and we'll take you to a page with a little prayer where you can make a spiritual communion with Jesus, because he wants communion with you. He's clearly telling you he wants communion with you. You can do this while you're watching a Mass on the television or on the YouTubes or whatever, but you can do it anytime. You can make a spiritual communion with Jesus. It's communion with Jesus that heals, and you already know that. So I'm just trying to let you know there are There are intermediate steps that you can take as you're moving towards full communion. Okay, Stephanie?
Okay, I will do that. Thank you.
Yep. If there's anything we can send you, just tell us. John will pick up in a second. John's covering. If there's a book or anything that you'd like from us, we'll send it to you. If not, that's perfectly fine. We understand. And you're always welcome to call back here. I hear the music, which means we have to take
everyone listening, pray for Stephanie and Scott.
Please do pray for Stephanie and Scott. And pray. And how beautiful is Jesus? I mean, every time I hear someone's story like that, he wants to be with us in the Eucharist. He wants to be in communion with us. He wants to make his home with us, and how beautiful it is when he calls us to that. Will you do another hour with us, Joe?
I'd be happy to.
You sure?
I would.
All right, if you're on the line, hang on the line. If you haven't dialed yet, 888-318-7884. It's Why Aren't You Catholic today? If you're not a Catholic, you are welcome to call. Even if it's a tough one, go ahead and call. 888-318-7884.